We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's OMF on EEI.
What's been the biggest adjustment for you, just, you know, not necessarily with the Patriots, but from the college game to the pro game?
Yeah, I think it's just, I touched on it a little bit earlier, just the information being thrown at us. It's a lot more complicated. You got to put a lot more, effort into learning the plays and just learning every scheme and what Josh McDaniels is trying to get done. And he's a genius. So if you buy into what he's doing and what he's teaching us, like, we should be great.
Now, let me introduce you to your new running back here, fourth round draft pick, Ramondre Stevenson. Hear that, Fourier?
Yeah.
It's very complicated what they do down there in Foxborough.
Yeah, it is. That's what
Cam
I've heard.
Cam Newton called it calculus.
This bleep calculus.
And you keep on telling me, nope, nothing like that. Well, Stevenson is now calling his offensive coordinator a freaking genius.
He's a genius.
No, you're not buying it?
Okay, so this just goes
this
to
pisses
a,
him off.
This Fitzy. Just goes
this I love,
him off.
I love how mad you
no,
get.
No, it just goes to a bigger issue I have overall when it comes to the legend that is being created with the overall Patriots playbook, the coaches, how difficult it is, you know, people who just, you know, carry the water and just continue this narrative. And that's what drives me crazy. So it reminds me of this quote. I don't even know what the freaking movie it's from. Okay, The Legend of Bagger Vance or something like it. Something to do with something Vance.
Oh, that was a golfer.
Yes, Will Smith was in that movie. And
it's really terrible.
Bad movie.
Terrible. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend. So when you have a choice and you have to choose between the history of something and the legend, let's push the legend. Let's push that as fact. And that is what I think they are doing. Cam Newton pushes this legend of this is calculus and this is difficult, and he tweets it out and he's carrying it on. Guys who can't understand the offense say that it's so challenging and difficult, and oh my God, it's the toughest offense in the history of offenses. You better be really, really smart, because I'm really smart and I can't pick it up. Chad Ochocinco. That is what they do. They create this narrative that is false, because it's easier for them to talk about the legend of the offense, the legend of Josh McDaniels, instead of just really looking at it for what it is. It's just a bunch of stupid plays like any other freaking offense. The only difference between this set of plays and some other set of plays was the quarterback that was running the offense.
It's going to damage the team.
So some stupid rookie
yeah,
who doesn't know his up from his down, his left from his right, comes out there because he's heard the legend, Fitzy. Mm-hmm. He's heard the great Cam Newton talk about this stuff, calculus,
this
man.
Explicit is calculus.
It's hard. It just drives me insane. So he hears about it. He's young. He looks up to Cam
when
Newton.
When did Cam
he
Newton become there. A guy with dip in his mouth in the South? Hey, this is, I tell you, hey, can I get a spittoon over here? It's funny you make a Western or like Southern
change,
reference because your quote, yeah. by the way,
wrong?
Was your quote, by the way, was not from Legend of Bagger Vance. So, it was from The Man Who Shot Liberty Bell.
Yeah, well, that was close.
Close enough.
It's a 25-year difference on the two movies. Not bad.
Close enough, yeah. Right?
By the
something
way,
Ford.
Hey, man,
something for
this.
John
calculus.
By the way, every character he has is some guy from Jacksonville. That's what it is.
Okay, hold on.
That's true.
Am I right or am I wrong? Does that quote kind of make sense
you
to you?
You nailed it. No, that's why we were all willing to cut you some slack, because you absolutely nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Yes, of course. That's the legend of it now. It's tale has been told. No man has ever been able to crack the Patriots'
No, it's crazy.
Playbook. It's a playbook.
I don't understand. But I don't like people pushing it like it's fact.
Zero out slot to trips to now we're putting Bonsai. Now we're doing matchup game. We're putting the Z here, the Y there. We're doing formation indicators like it's nothing.
Okay.
Thank you, Jules.
There you go. Jules. Appreciate
Julian
that.
Edelman.
I'm sure Pat McAfee heard that and was like, fine. Yeah, it's playbook. I punted. Listen, it's like the bits and parts and pieces. Like everything at this point now is bits and parts and pieces of other things. Like it's the Earhart, Perkins, McDaniels, Brady, Weiss conglomerate playbook. And what it is they take the football and they try to move it forward past your defensive people and they try to score it in the 6-point house. That's what they do, right? And you throw it to the right and you throw it to the left and sometimes you run it around here and sometimes you go over there. That's it.
See, but this is what
just slightly different terminology. Brady's sightline adjustments. That was the difference, Christian. Oh,
that was part of it. The his expectations playing in living up to his expectations, and coupled with Bill and Charlie's and everybody else. Like so now that rookie will say something. Some other freshman or sophomore in college or some other free agent will be like, wow, that guy too. Jeez, I mean, I guess it's true. I don't want to go there. It's hard. Very demanding. Josh McDaniels is Bill Walsh. Oh, my God. Like, he invented a new offense. I don't know about you guys, but nobody is leaving the Patriots running the Josh McDaniels East Coast offense. Nobody. Nobody is running it. The West Coast offense. There's not this huge tree like Bill Walsh or Mike Holmgren or, Gruden. You name it. Mike Sherman, who now was coaching high school football down on the Cape, okay? These guys, is he a smart, is he a really good offensive coordinator?
Well, let me guess.
He is. He's not a genius. Until he invents an offense, until he stops stealing from college and other teams, then I'll call him a genius. Until he creates a brand new, this offense is not even his.
He's a genius.
So, like, I mean, not. I don't want to rip Josh, because I really like him. I think he's good at what he does. I think it's too late for that.
So, last five minutes, you may want to walk it back a little
hold
bit.
Hold on. I'm not ripping him. I'm ripping the other dopes who are
creating the mystique.
So now they have a genius as an offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. They have a genius as a head coach. Mm-hmm. They have a rocket scientist in Matt Patricia. Right. Okay? And I don't know who else is there. Oh, and Ernie Adams is the really only true genius in the book.
Right? Pinkstrap. We're smarter than you, guy. The Patriots. I can't handle it.
I want to throw open my mouth.
He gets this pisses it's him off so more aggravating. Than anything that they're smarter in Foxborough than any other NFL city.
The offense kept going.
They're so smart that they say, "Let's play a trick on our starting quarterback. We're going to change all the offensive play calls and the line stunts. We're going to change our predictions. We're going to change the way we call the plays. Just to screw." Yeah, don't tell him. Don't tell Cam Newton.
Hold on. But go back to level one.
Jacksonville.
We're just trying to keep it a buck. We're just trying to keep it 100.
I think you're right in the way that people overdo it. Because if you look at Josh McDaniels, and I think we all agree, pretty damn good offensive coordinator. One of the better offensive coordinators in the league. But when he left this organization and he went out to Denver, didn't work out so well. Mm. His offense were really weak. Do you remember the year he was offensive coordinator in St. Louis with the Rams? Ooh, dead last. 32nd. Couldn't score a lick, okay?
He had no talent.
So, right. Okay. So that's the point. If he has no talent, he can't really move the offense. Did we not see that last year? The funniest thing we heard, and we kind of mocked it, in the offseason last year, people were saying, oh, my God, Josh McDaniel is now going to be able to do stuff he's never done before. He's going to be able to open up the playbook. You fell for
guilty.
It.
I fell for it.
He's going to be able
guilty
to do it.
Guilty as charged.
Are you kidding me? You're going to lose Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time. And you're telling me that you're going to be able to do more stuff at a higher rate and be more productive? There's no freaking way.
Oh, man.
No freaking
way.
See,
here's what I think it does. Okay, so if you create the legend that it's one of the toughest offenses to learn and it's highly challenging and it's like only smart people can achieve true success, right, at its peak. If you do it, well, then you're one of the greats. Because you figured it out.
You're
just like, line them up with all the other greats that are wearing red jackets and maybe a yellow jacket. If you can't do it, it's not your fault. They just made it too difficult. They were trying too hard. They're trying to force a round peg into a square hole. So it's their fault. It's not your fault. So I think either way, the player protects himself. If he claims that it's really hard like Cam Newton did, dude, this is ridiculous. Guys, I'm a really good player. I was an MVP. You know I'm good. So, like, I came to this offense, and they made it way too challenging, way too difficult. I couldn't catch up. It was too hard. I didn't have enough time. I didn't have OTAs. I didn't have an offseason. I didn't have preseason. Guys, come on. I'm a year behind.
And it was Tom Brady's offense. He kept on telling us it was Tom Brady's offense. We saw that offense.
I wasn't just trying to learn a system for what it was. I was learning a, let's be honest, a 20-year system in 2 months.
He's wrong.
Okay, so he was learning a system for what it is. That is exactly what it is. You were not running the same plays at the same level as Brady. They would never expect you to run five different checks with six receivers. Are you kidding me? They're not doing it.
Yeah, read those five guys out there. Tell us what you want to do.
Hold on. Am I supposed to say Wadeti? Wadeti?
Here's what I will say, though. In all fairness, he gets so pissed at this.
This is great.
Did I pronounce that correctly? Ramondre, right? Ramondre, whatever. Stevenson, you know what this kid's doing? He's sitting there and he wants to play. And so he's kissing the ass of the offensive coordinator.
Josh McDaniels trying to get done, and he's a genius.
That's what he's saying. Not only on the field, but off the field things. Like what? What are we talking about? How to carry yourself. What to be prepared for on the football field, in the classroom. That's things true. Like that. Just bettering my game in every aspect. Of course, every coach does that. He is trying to fight for playing time.
Yes.
He wants to play.
Because he knows.
He's not going to sit there and say, hey, what do you think of Josh McDaniels? He's okay. Not bad. Yeah,
I've had better coaches. He's no Lincoln Riley.
And it probably is a little bit. It probably is a little bit different, the learning curve.
No,
the pros
totally
than it is in college.
Their head's spinning. Their head is spinning beyond belief.
So he's kissing
and he doesn't
up to
know
the guy,
any better.
Right. Who's teaching him?
But all he's heard is a legend. That's all he's heard. He doesn't know the history, so he can't rely on history. He just goes with the legend. He's what he's heard on TV, what he's seen on Sundays. The guy's been in a bunch of Super Bowls. But so I get it.
Christian, he walks into the facility and he sees the six trophies. He sits there. That's all part of it.
And there's the guy that was calling the plays.
Right. Well, some of them. Not all the trophies. But you're right.
Yeah.
That's what happens. That's exactly what happens.
And that to me, so when it's all said and done, there will be this just huge gap of misinformation and reality that's the way it is. That I guess ultimately any rookie going into any offensive playbook is going to struggle beyond belief. Struggle. Forget about just learning where to line up. The speed. Everybody's three times as fast as they was when you were playing, Eastern New Mexico State.
Right.
When the guys were like 18 and 19 and they didn't know where they were going either. They only read one side of the offense. So that is ultimately, I'm never going to get off this hill. I will die on this hill by myself if I have to. And that just drives me nuts.
Well, it never drives you nuts when they refer to Bill Belichick as that genius. It does when they bring up anybody else that's around the tree, right? The branches.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, not that they're not good coaches. I think Dante Scarnecchia is a genius when it comes to offensive linemen. As a genius when
because
it comes
why?
To
because
coaching.
Because he's made such an impact?
Because he can really take he can take any type of situation. And I've had Howard Mudd was my offensive line coach. So who is regarded as one of the best to ever do it.
Right.
So I think I have a good comparison of guys to, look at and say, they say Dante's really good, but, Howard Mudd was better.
Okay, but I agree with
you.
So
there's some comparison, I think, that I can use.
When you talk about Dante Scarnecchia, I agree with you, yet we can look at the record, maybe it was coincidence, the year he decided on staying out of the game, they ended up winning the Super Bowl that year without him.
With Googe.
What's Googe?
With Googe. Googe? Yeah. I don't know.
It won't without him. So, I agree, it's probably just coincidence because I think Dante is as good as they come, and we've seen it over the years and what he's done for these players, but I could cite, maybe he's not a genius because the one year he was gone, they won.
There's been other, offensive line coaches that have won championships that were good offensive line coaches.
Sure, but weren't like legendary like Scarnecchia. It's about, the legendary status, this whole, he's a genius. This is obviously the Ramondre Stevenson realizing that he's in a more crowded backfield than anticipated. They're going to run Sony into the ground, and he's competing for special teams time and a couple of carries this season. So why not kiss the coach's ass on the way in? And maybe he is more impressed with him than he had anticipated. But there, to your point, Kendrick Bourne last week, I read a tweet where he said, the difficult part is I'm learning new terminology, but it's a playbook. Like, he said something.
He brought some rationale to it.
Yeah, he said something along the lines of, it's hard as in I have to basically relearn the way that you say it. Like, the word is, you know, like the way you say this word, it's different over here in San Francisco than it is over here in New England, but it's still the same fundamental concept. Like, I go here, somebody throws me the ball. Or they run this guy and I block that
so
guy.
So it really is that simple.
So maybe not that simple.
So maybe this kid Stevenson is accustomed to very elementary, simplistic.
Oh, he's just a dumb
And he's looking at this and, oh my God, my head is spinning or whatever.
Get my bag.
Or he's kissing.
Here's my pad. What'd they run in Oklahoma? Like a variation of the air raid? Is that the hardest offense in the world?
Or he's kissing Josh McDaniels' ass because he just wants playing time. It's possible. Hey, there's a billboard that is located right outside the practice facility of the Boston Celtics that is very interesting, basically pleading with Brad Stevens to hire a specific coach. We're going to get to it coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I think they're going to hire Kara Lawson. So I know the organization thinks that she's unbelievable. I know that the players respect her when she went down to Duke to coach the women's team there. It's not one of those things where, well, she's good for a female. No, 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 no. She walked into practice and she commanded practice right from the jump. She's elite at what she does. I thought, like, from the jump, she has head coaching material within 5 minutes of talking with her. And then, like, and that's just me meeting her on my own. And then I started asking the other coaches about her. And it was, like, authentically, like, they were, like, this person, she is a completely different level as a basketball coach. I think she might be the most qualified for the job.
Interesting. That was Brian Scalabrine. That was like a couple of weeks ago. Celtics better hurry because Portland and other teams are out there already interviewing these people. So the names that we've heard that the Celtics are going to interview, Chauncey Billups, Darvin Ham, Charles Lee, Jamal Mosley with the Mavericks, and Ime Udoka with the Nets.
Ooh, good choice.
I don't see Becky Hammond. I don't see Kara Lawson on that list. But Gary Washburn tweeted this out. This billboard has been placed near the Celtics practice facility. Is it time? The billboard reads, "Hey, Brad, it's time to shake it up. Hire Kara or Becky." And then there are a bunch of sponsors underneath it, which obviously validates it, right? I mean, it's got legitimate sponsors underneath. And so what are we doing here? Are we basically trying to sit there and say it's time to hire a woman, okay, which it probably is, and I think that is something a woman certainly could do in a sport that is played by men. They could coach, no question about it. Or are we sitting there saying, you got to hire Kara or Becky over the other people on this list because they're better candidates?
Okay, so the billboard is sponsored by a nutrition company. So it must either be a brand that is a fan of hers or maybe that has been a sponsor of hers previously. So it's not the other major pharmaceutical brands or pharmacy brands that you see to the right of the billboard. Still, the fact that they would take the time and spend the dough to promote her is impressive. What I hear you saying right now is, this could be a case of optics man stepping in.
Ooh.
This could be an optics man case where, hey, Celtics, a lot of bad looks for you the last couple of years. You know what would work real well for you guys? You know what would help buff out a lot of those dents that the organization has taken? Hire a smart female coach to come in. Maybe even one that you've worked with before. Hey, look, she's got some organizational credibility. Hey, she's smart. She went to Duke. She was with the Celtics. She's great. Or how about Greg Popovich's likely hand-picked potential replacement? Why don't you go and snap her up before she takes over for Pop and Becky Hammond?
bring him in for an interview. What's the worst that can happen? They can absolutely knock you over and be considered legitimate candidates.
Well, I think they
should. Why not?
Yeah,
there's
I think
literally nothing to lose except basketball games.
I think they should definitely bring him in for an interview. And Becky Hammon is being interviewed for the Portland job. I'm not necessarily sure that they should hire him, not because I don't want to see a woman coaching in the NBA, but what this team really needs is it needs an ex-NBA player. It needs somebody like a Chauncey Billups, somebody who's played the game, who's played the point guard position, that understands the mentality of moving the basketball. And I'm sorry to both Kara and Becky, and they both played basketball, and they played it at a high level, but they didn't play it in the NBA, and I think the players need that right now. I saw Mike D'Antoni was on that list, and he's also on the list in Portland. My guess with that, because Mike is, check it up, Tyler, he's in his 70s, I believe,
now. He is.
Okay? And he's a really good offensive-minded coach. If you want offense, Mike D'Antoni is your guy. But it's more likely, if you're going to get a former NBA player as your head coach, your number one assistant, which is ultra-important, has got to be one of those guys that specializes in offense or defense and is a real X and O guy. That's Mike D'Antoni. So what they're probably doing is interviewing him, and then they come back and say, you are the runner-up for the job, but we'll give you a lot more money than they're giving you in Brooklyn right now. And I don't know what his situation is in Brooklyn. That's why I think they're interviewing him. And I would say the opposite. If you had somebody like a Brad Stevens, and we talked about this here in Boston, what you need as a number two guy is you need an ex-player to get to the players, to get them to understand, I know what you're going through, Jason. I went through the exact same thing. You're for my career. I went through the. He can relate to that guy.
So is this supposed to be like an attempt to shame Brad Stevens and the Celtics
shame
into
you.
Doing something that they're not really ready to do? Not because they don't want a woman, but just because they don't want an amateur. Let's just like Carol. I mean, like, what are we acting like? Let's win at Duke first.
Mm-hmm.
Win there. Win like Brad did. Well, you know what? Even more importantly, leave Duke. Go to a smaller school, win there with crappy players, develop them, get to the Final Four, beat Stanford, and then beat Duke. And then I'll say, wow, you're just really good at your job. I don't know if you'll be a good, I don't know if these guys are going to respect you. They respected you and they listened to you as an assistant. You were no threat to them. You couldn't tell them what to do. You were more friends than anything.
Mm-hmm.
As a head coach, it's a different type of relationship.
Much different.
Now you need to be demanding.
Much
different.
Now
you need to force the issue at times.
You need to say
just
no.
Be their buddy.
And you need to say no. I want to bring my brother on the plane with me.
Right.
No. What do you mean? Who are you? Right. You never play. You don't know what it's like to travel. I'm not saying that eventually they can't do, but it's you give me a high-end quality candidate. Give me the lady that's down in LSU. Who was an Olympic gold medalist, who won multiple championships at Baylor and finally left because LSU paid her a bunch of money. Get that girl whose name I don't know.
Perfect. Get her.
Get her.
Becky Hammon, like Kim Mulkey.
Kim Mulkey.
Wow, Tyler bailing you out.
Of course.
Yeah.
MMA style.
That's what Tyler does. Basketball.
But why not Becky Hammon then? When you have somebody who has been healed at the side of one of the best coaches, the Bill Belichick of the NBA.
She has far more experience.
She does. Why not interview her then?
Pro experience.
Or if not, and if you don't think that she's qualified, or you, Brad Stevens thinks like this could be a bridge too far for me, considering I got this job when no one expected it, and we definitely need someone relatable. That's why Udoka from the Nets makes all the sense in the world, because he was there for 7 years and now he helps draw plays on, well, what used to be the most offensively supercharged team in the NBA. And he's a former player, played for like five different teams.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the plays. To me, Brad Stevens was brilliant when it came to the plays. And what did that get him? Okay. Jeez. I think Christian is right when he talks about this.
Knives.
You know, when Scalabrine is talking about, well, everybody has great respect and she's terrific, I'm not denying that. She probably is great sitting down and running the X's and O's or whatever. But you're asking her now to, because the culture of this team needs to be changed dramatically. There really is a weakness that deals with this team. Is she going to be the one that comes in and motivates these guys? I'm not sure. I feel confident that she can do it. I feel more confident that an ex-player, especially a guy that played at the point guard role, is going to have a connection with that team and the ball movement and everything they need to do, and is going to be a hard ass and understand and say, listen, I've been here before. You can't sit there and tell me. I've done all of this. I've been to championships. I've done all of it. Don't tell me. No, your brother's not coming on the plane. We don't do business that way. You need somebody like that.
See, I wonder, like, in college they do this a lot. Like, they don't necessarily grab the most experienced coach. They go with the coach that the players can relate to. Now in college, you're obviously, you know, you're hitting at a much lower age because the kids are so young. You're hitting in, you know, the low 30s because the kids can relate. He's hip to everything that they're into, you know, and he can relate to them a little bit better than an older coach with a ton of experience who's maybe 60. It makes sense sometimes, and that always bugs me because, you know, they just kind of, and I guess that's just the way it is.
Well, some of those old coaches.
But I feel like this is the way the Celtics should go.
Yeah,
I think they should go this route, find somebody in their 30s, low 40s, not any higher than that.
Ex-player. I agree. Ex-player. It's got to be an ex-player.
Ex-player with championship pedigree that is actually, listen, you don't want to believe me?
Yep.
Okay, like Steve Nash. I always look at Steve, I'm like, these guys, man, I'm amazed they respect him. But hell, Steve Nash was awesome.
Yeah, but you know what they have? They have people around him that are doing all of the X's and O's and doing all of that stuff.
Well, you go back Nash?
You can go back to the Celtics.
Smart move
that
by
staff
him.
Is loaded.
You can go back to the Celtics in the 80s. Casey Jones, it took over for Bill Fitch because the players shut Bill Fitch off. They got swept by Milwaukee only because they weren't focused. They didn't care about Bill Fitch. They wanted him fired. So they bring Casey Jones in, but they also have Jimmy Rogers, Chris Ford, and others wrapped around him that were all X and O guys that were drawing up everything.
And an insanely talented core of veterans as well.
Yeah.
Now, with the Celtics, you don't have an insanely talented core of veterans. You've got some younger players that are ascending to stardom, some other younger players who have underwhelmed and underperformed thus far. And you've got, like you said, Glenn, an attitude problem, or at least you have an emotional core that needs to be altered. I don't really know what this Celtics team is right now. You know what? If I had to describe them in one sentence, they are potential unfulfilled. Right now, this Celtics team, they had so many draft picks, they had so many different guys coming in that were supposed to make such a difference, and they've got this talented core of Brown and Tatum, each individually a top 30 player, maybe Tatum top 10. But yeah. I don't know what they are emotionally.
Yeah, but when you say that...
Celtics basketball right now?
They really haven't reached their ceiling? Is that what you're saying? Because I would look at next year...
close to it.
I would look at next year and say they're probably a 7th seed again, talent-wise. And as we said earlier, I think they're going to get less in return for Kemba Walker, which won't be great. We spent a lot of time last week talking about Tuukka Rask and whether Tuukka Rask should have been in goal for Game 5 and then for Game 6. Today, Bruce Cassidy actually spoke with the media, and I'm even more stunned by his answer about why he went with Tuukka Rask. We will get to it coming up next right here on OMF.
Four for four. Come on, hit it.
In other words, he doesn't know the words.
I don't even know. What were we singing? Anybody know?
That was
what
a Hall & Oates song.
I can tell you what it's like, all right. I can tell you that you're standing in the same line.
One of the greatest things.
You got the body, now you got my soul.
There you go. See, you knew it.
No, not say no more.
See, you got it.
Say I'll do anything that you want me to. And let me guess.
I think most
and
of us,
Glenn can't go for that.
No, I think most of us have the same problem with words for songs. And the two,
we don't know them.
Lyrics?
Yeah, the two greatest inventions are the app where you can put it on. If you're hearing a song and you don't recognize what the song is.
That is Glenn as one of them. I am one of the most dad users of that thing on planet Earth.
I love it. And I can't tell you how many
Shazam.
Times.
Right. And you hold it up to the phone.
Yes.
Meanwhile, everyone else is busy either looking at their phones or being super millennial and drinking a vodka soda or hard seltzer. And you're the guy in the corner like, sorry, I just really like this song. I don't know the name of it. Hi, excuse me, can I get a... I just want to get a clear line of sight on the speaker. It's a great jam.
Right.
I like it. I want to add it to my playlist. The kids love when I have a playlist.
And then you
can... 1957, I remember it was.
We didn't have that in 57, I can
we
tell you that.
We want that luck!
Then you can get all of the lyrics to the song. And so you sit there and you don't feel like you did, Christian, where you're sitting there going...
I like the way I go about it.
All you got to do is pull down your bifocals and put it on font 36, Flavin. Hey.
It's more fun the way I do it. It's more of an experience. It's more of
it's a, more of an experience.
It's more of a musical.
Mike's might be alive. But...
so you see, it's like, you know.
That is Prince's 1999.
Thank you very much. I still don't know it. Totally. I should be like in an a cappella group.
Yeah, you really should. You're like the Whiff and Poofs.
Yeah.
Out of Yale.
An a cappella group that doesn't use words.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
I like, you know, it. What he is? Do it. He's $1 million idea.
That's it, Tyler. He is forming the first ever scat a cappella group.
Very good.
Let's do it.
It's going to be a trend. I can feel it. It's going to be a trend. Yeah.
Christian Fourier, otherwise known as DJ Scatapella. Come on.
Mike's might be live.
Well, now you're just turning into a bad, low-rent version of Michael Winslow from Police Academy.
Mike's might be live. Do all the sound effects, yeah. All right, so the Bruins season is over.
Oh,
so,
why didn't someone tell me?
Footy Islanders look pretty good. Okay,
I know,
so
right? You feel
anyway,
better about the loss
yeah,
now?
So, no, I don't. And I still don't feel good about the Tuukka Rask experience through Game 5 and through Game 6. So I want you to listen to Bruce Cassidy because he was asked the question today whether he regretted playing Tuukka over Swayman.
Well, I'll tell you the process, and I'll be quite open with you. He met with us every day, medical staff, myself, goalie Bob. You know, he played Game 1 with it, you know, against Washington right through to, obviously, Game 6 in New York. So in that case, Hags, we were never going to run out a goal, you know, a player that wasn't fit to play. So it first passed through him, then alluding to your question, and he regularly told us he was ready to go. Incident Game 5 after the second period, I thought he didn't look as sharp. Goalie Bob talked to him. He said he was lacking some energy. So we said, well, we'll go with Swayman in the third. Came back the next day, said he was feeling better. And then it comes on to me. I have to make the final call. Who gives us the best chance to win? And I chose Tuukka. So no regrets on that. And some of those decisions also go through the leadership group. Are, you know, where are you guys at in terms of your mental psyche with the goaltending? And, you know, they were all on board with Tuukka as well. They certainly believe in Swayman, but Tuukka's been there and done it. You're always going to sort of analyze some things that happened after the series, but that's when we felt he gave us the best chance to win. That was the decision. He was healthy to play, had played, played well, and that was that.
Here's the problem I have with his answer. You're telling me in Game 5 of a series that's tied up at 2 apiece, it is the biggest game of the season. In the second period, Tuukka Rask came to you and said he was lacking energy. I think we all thought that maybe, as we now have heard, the labrum was an issue with him in the hip. We thought maybe he was hurting in the back, he was hurting in the hip. There was no lacking energy for Game 5 in the second period. And you feel confident, even though he just tells you when the game is over, yeah, I feel a lot better now. Yeah, you didn't have to play the third period. You didn't have to do anything for the last hour. And so you're going to play him in Game 6? You're not going to question, why is he suddenly lacking energy in this game?
Okay, so that's what stood out to you, the
absolutely
energy part. It is weird, though, because
it was a pretty low-key performance by Tuukka the last couple of games.
Yeah, but it, no, I agree with you. His choice of words and phrases are odd to me. But the one that stood out to me, which I think ultimately kind of helped drive his decision, was the leadership group. How he leaned on his leadership group, which I'm assuming is, you know, Marchand, Bergeron, like the older guys.
They said to stay with Rask.
They said, hey, yeah. And it had nothing to do with whether he was healthy. It's like, hey, guys, your psyche, when it comes to your psyche, your mental state, who would you guys personally feel more comfortable with? Who would you rather see out there? And they say Rask.
Okay,
we're not letting Rask down. So I think if he has no regrets, it's because he did what his players wanted him to do.
Then that's a failure as a coach, I hate to say it.
It could be.
I mean, you're supposed to listen to your guys and get a feel for the room, but ultimately the decision is yours. And if every leader, every president, every governor or mayor just did what they thought the people wanted to do, then there would be Coca-Cola or beer in the water fountains, and we'd be an absolute disaster, or we'd be a smoking pile of ashes. The coach has to get an idea how his players are feeling. Read the, you know, take, you know, like, you know, Christian, you got to take the temperature, but he has to do, stop me if you've heard this before, what's in the best interest of the underscore team, football team, hockey team, baseball team.
I know,
and
but
if the goalie Bob is telling you, hey, looks like Tuukka is lacking energy out there, something's off, then maybe he's got to trust the people who are there to diagnose the specific player and not just do what, you know, athletes yourself, you're never going to say like, hey, coach, I think I need to sit it out. You're always going to try to gut it out because that's who you are. That's what you do. Tuca was going to try to gut it out. You can't listen to the players there. That's their guy. And the second they undercut him, Christian, the second they say like, well, you know, I think Tuke's hurt. You got to go with Swayman. He's done. May as well just pack his bags and not come back.
See, I agree with you, but I do think that he puts himself in a really bad position from allowing his veterans to have a voice and to have a say in the outcome of this. So he says, all right, I've made a career of involving my captains, my assistant captains, and the most important players on my team. I'm going to lean on them because this is about them just as much as it is about me. So I go to them. They say, you know what? They know what's hurt. Okay. They know if he's what's going on. They're in the locker room. They talk with him. So they get it, and they say, no matter what, this is the guy we want. We want to ride or die with this guy. So he says, damn. But back in my head, I'm saying, this guy can't. He's got no energy. He's constantly needing maintenance. But they want him. They feel more comfortable with him out there, even though he's skating on one leg. That, to me, I think, ultimately probably led to his final decision.
I think he should have regrets.
No?
Am I
alone on this?
No, I think he should have regrets. I'm agreeing with you that he might have listened because he clearly said that, you know, the veteran group or whatever. But I'm still amazed that the player would actually come to him in the second period and say, hey, coach, I'm lacking energy. Because I think we all felt that it was an injury situation. He's lacking energy. And so suddenly...
That's code, though.
Code for what?
Like, I think that's like a phrase that they would use to kind of describe the fact, like to protect him from saying hurt, injured. So he's lacking energy.
But we know
like
he's got no
spunk to him. Yeah, fire to him because
he's supposed to go to Northeast Men's Hockey Clinic and maybe get his low energy issue dealt with. Yeah,
but we know now.
Maybe that was the reason.
Too many boom sauces the night before.
There you go.
But why would he say that now and worry about the code word? Because we've all known now. They have admitted that he's got a torn labrum, that we're going to have surgery done here. Mm-hmm. I don't get none of this. I don't understand any of it. And if he's got low energy in the second period, then even if your veteran group comes to you and has that conversation and says, you know, we want to stick with him. Hey, guys, he's coming to me in the second period and telling me he's got no energy or lacking energy. Maybe we've got to think about this right now. He might be really struggling.
Okay, so if Tuca is that hurt and he's lacking energy between the pipes and absolutely gets peppered in that second period of Game 5, and it's all Dunsky at that point, except Swayman comes in, gives up an easy goal, and they almost stage the comeback. Damn shame. If only we had some energy between the pipes in the second period. And he's got a torn labrum, and it didn't allow Tuca to make the lateral movements he needed to keep up with an aggressive, a much tougher team like the Islanders. How come, or so rumor is, that he was able to come home and like play a round of pity golf?
Did he?
Isn't there a little bit of a word out there that Tuke maybe got in a couple of shots?
Well,
I
tell you what,
back?
There are a lot of Tuca Rask spies out there on the golf courses.
You guys make golf out every to time be like, something, it's this big tough run.
But there, listen, I'll have you know, I just played race. 8 holes in the rain,
and only 4 beers.
Yeah, no, damn it, I had none.
Hockey? Why should be playing golf? Because it's
there's a lot of guys
golf?
Out on the golf course after that.
Well,
game.
That's fine. Yeah, okay. Pasternak was out there playing. Yeah, they were all tweeting at Barstool guys saying like, oh, let's go play golf. Let's do this. Great. Don't you think again? It's kind of weird if Tuca did indeed go play some golf when he came back. It's kind of weird like, oh, so I would just go home and not be seen again until I have the surgery.
Yeah.
I'd be in the house.
I hate to tell you, guys like these guys.
They don't care.
Athletes, they're a different breed. They don't look at it that way. He can go out and play golf, and he looks at it and says, it's not going to beat me up going and playing 18 holes of golf. I'm not going to worry about it. And the public perception, you're right.
The Causeway guy?
No, the Causeway monsters
are going to see that and be like.
No, I think the public perception is the same way we heard last year when he left the bubble for a family emergency and people were claiming that he was out in the golf course shortly after that within a couple of days. It's the public perception, again, is really bad. That's a bad look. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. This is not a good look. But they look at it and say, screw the look. I don't care. I'm going to go play 18, and it's not going to mess with my hip. It's not a big deal. It's golf.
It's like
as Ryan said, it's not heavy lifting.
It's like I remember pre-working here, still just goofing around on YouTube as super fan. I remember the Patriots lose Super Bowl 46, and Gronk, of course, had that banged up ankle from that tackle by that no good son of a bitch, Bernard Pollard, right in the AFC Championship. Yeah. And then there was footage that came out the next day. I think I saw it in Barstool or someplace of Gronk dancing, just like doing his like shirtless bro freak dancing
at the
Super Bowl 46 party.
Right.
No Brady there. He's probably he's home. He's pissed. He's somewhere else.
Right.
And Gronk was a. I just remember thinking like, could you be out there? How could you be celebrating? Like you should be mad. You almost could. You could have caught the Hail Mary at the end if your ankle
depressed.
Wasn't so banged up. You should be like me. Just yo soy crying at all. Pissed off. I never understood that. But like you say,
bad look.
Maybe they can. Yeah, it's a bit of a
different breed. They look at it
just
differently.
Unplug.
Okay,
I admire that. I admire that.
Game is over. Super Bowl game is over. I wasn't healthy enough. I'm okay. I'm fine. I got to move on. And now I'm going to let loose because I've been working here for the last 6-7 months. Am I making any sense over there, big fella?
Epic, man.
Yeah, I don't.
Any sense?
Here's what the people don't understand. Just going back in the hot tub time machine to that time. Mm-hmm. Each team has a preset post game. Lineup of musicians.
Of course.
Whether you win or you lose.
Unbelievable.
Lionel Richie is going to sing, Ballerina Girl, whether you win or lose.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Snoop Dogg will get up there with his gin and juice no matter what.
I was there at Super Bowl 53. I walked a diagonal line home because I had plenty of celebration sauce.
And it just.
Super Bowl 53 is a great time.
Yeah, so it was. It got bigger and bigger, at least especially with the Patriots when they start renting out these huge halls and these big, auditoriums of 5,000 people.
Then the league took over that stuff.
Well, but it was at one time it was small and intimate.
Yep, it was.
It was a small little hotel ballroom where you can literally touch Lionel Richie and play the keys, and just kind of
Super
piss
Bowl
him off.
What happened?
But I've never done that before.
I was going to say, did you touch Lionel Richie? Why would you touch
him? Man, what a feeling touching you when you're not even dancing on the ceiling.
Hello? Hey, can I rub my fingers through your hair?
Play chopsticks. Get out of the way.
I'm going to go for nothing without you.
Hey, yeah, man, you're the best Commodore of all time. So wait a second. What happened after Super Bowl 38? What happened after Super Bowl 38?
What do you mean?
Where was that? Where was that party? How small was that?
Oh,
compared
it was small, intimate, in the just a whole like a wedding ballroom, like you would say, some like a little bit bigger than like a high end wedding.
It was horrible.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, those were tiny. They were very small.
And they had different acts in different rooms. Like you can literally be like, it was like go over here. And my buddy who played for the Carolina Panthers, they had a lineup also. I forgot what lineup they were playing, but they was. It was great.
Yeah.
They were over there partying and having a blast.
They had the country artist all the way down the hallway.
Right.
Tiny little room.
Celebrating it's like so failure. Corporate.
I want to play one more thing with Tuukka Rask before we have to take a break. And this is Charlie Coyle, and he's asked about this criticism that is directed towards his goalie.
Tuukka's a pretty, I think that stuff kind of bounces off him, or at least it looks like it. The criticism he gets is just insane. It's got to be people who just, I don't know, don't watch closely or what, but we all know what Tuukka brings and how good he is, what he plays through, what he's done for us, what he's done for this organization. For anyone to criticize him is I guess don't use the word bozo before, so it's just stupid. We love Tuukka. We all know what he brings every day. I think Tuukka knows that, and that's all he needs.
So he's a teammate. He's going to say that, but I agree with him. I think that the criticism is really insane when it comes to Tuukka Rask. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about whether he was physically able to play in Game 5. And then when you saw Game 5 and he had to leave in the second period in Game 5 and his coach is now telling us he lacked energy, where was the decision made and how was it made to bring him back for Game 6? Because that was a risky venture. And you needed him in Game 6 in the last game, the elimination game. You needed him, here we go with the hockey term, to stand on his head. He did not. He was okay. Maybe not so good. But he didn't stand on his head.
No. And so who's this an indictment on more, would you say?
Coach.
Is this on coach?
On the coach.
Or on Swayman that they didn't believe that he was ready and he was too young, too eager? Maybe he had too much energy.
I don't know.
Wouldn't be able to calm down.
Was it a Stidham case? I don't know. Where they didn't have confidence in him? Maybe that's a possibility. I don't know. He looked damn good in the times that I saw him in 9 or 10 games during the regular season. I would say this one comes down to Cassidy. I don't have a problem with Tuukka Rask. I understand what he's dealing with, and he's going to get the surgery. To me, I just think the decision by Cassidy was a little bit reckless.
This, to me, is a veteran group of hockey players who would be damned if they're going to let some rookie go in there in an important game when they had been around Tuukka, ride and die with this guy, that whole thing, and they would be damned if they were going to let a rookie take his spot when he was saying that he could play. That's, I think that has 80% to do with it. And if that is the, and I can't blame him because I think I would do the same thing.
Okay, of course you would. You're a former professional athlete. Yeah, that's supposed to be your mindset, and it's the coach's job to get in there and say, I can't let you do that. I know this is how you're programmed. I'm hired to make these decisions.
We will not play Cassidy if you put Seaman out there on the ice.
Swayman.
All right. That's our on the street. You missed that day. You missed that day. This is where Ryan plays the drop where the drunk girl is today.
Yeah, let me get right on that.
Yeah, hold on. Why don't you give him like about 12 minutes to be able to put it together.
Oh, but then I'm you.
All right, so no Stephon Gilmore today at practice. Bill Belichick seeming to make excuses for all of the absence guys. Of course, that's typical Bill. He always makes excuses for the guys to not to show up. And now nationally, you're hearing that Gilmore...
And put in Swayman.
And
go,
you.
Please.
You're sorry, what were you saying, Glenn?
You're hearing that Gilmore... Minutes. You're hearing that Gilmore may not show up at all.
Go, Bees!
For these mandatory workouts. And now nationally, they're talking about the Patriots trading him away.
That's how it starts.
All of that coming up in the final hour here of OMF with Nick Stevens. It's your old buddy Fitzy filling in today for Lou. This hour brought to you by Window World of Boston. Call 1-800-NEXT-WIN or online windowworldofboston.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.